You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome back to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am the Sly One, Jordan Fox, and with me today is my partner in crime, your Floyd and savior, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. from Around the Ring. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. Life is great. I just got through watching most of today's G1. I only got through 3 of the 5 matches, but I got 2 more to go, and it's been good so far. So, as long as I'm watching wrestling, life is good.
Absolutely. That's what I've said that many a times before. As long as I've got wrestling, maybe a cup of coffee, you know, like, I can survive the day. You know what I mean? Whether I'm sick or whatever. If I got some wrestling, I'm good. So, you and I were talking, and the first thing that we wanted to do was thank everyone that's been tuning in to the show. I think we said this last episode, in the last week or two, we've seen a bit of an increase. I think I said 8% yesterday, but I think it's actually closer to 15%. But a 15% increase in our listenership over the last 2 weeks, I think. So Floyd and I both wanted to say thank y'all. To all the new listeners.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, for sure. So to all the new listeners, to all the old listeners, to all the medium listeners, if you're tuning into the show, we appreciate it. We're still, my boy Darren, our friend from across the way, he tweeted me yesterday to give me a suggestion on how we should address the people that tune in every day, and he had a good one. I'm not going to say it yet because I think maybe we're going to put something together and have like the top 3 like names, you know what I mean? Like friendos is what Going in Raw calls their listenership is called friendos, and then the Wrestle Ramble podcast calls them Swaff Nation. So we're going to think of something, you and I are. You and I and Mike, he's gonna brainstorm about it as well, and the 3 of us are going to come up with something cool. But anyway, I digress. I just wanted to say, and Floyd wanted to say as well, you know, from the bottom of our hearts, for everyone tuning in, we truly appreciate it. We could not do it without y'all. If y'all weren't listening, there would be absolutely no reason for us. I mean, me and Floyd would still talk wrestling, but there wouldn't really be a need to record it, you know what I mean, if no one wanted to listen to it. We could just text about it, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
But today, with it being Friday, we wanted to go over everything that's happened in the G1 Climax thus far. Not every single little detail, but we wanted to go night by night. We covered the first 3 nights quickly yesterday. So we were going to kind of do a quick review of what you thought about the first 3 nights and what matches you thought were the best. And then we're just going to go day by day and just talk some G1, just break it down, man. How does that sound to you?
That sounds great to me.
Sweet, man. Well, we'll get going right here. So the first day of the tournament was July 14th, and that was day 1 for the A block. So, like I said, we reviewed the first 3 days yesterday, so why don't you give us a brief recap on what your favorite match or your 2 favorite matches were, or your highest rated matches from day 1.
Day 1, the A block, I definitely said my highest rated match was Jay White versus Okada. But the other must watch match of the night was Michael Elgin versus the Lord of Darkness Evil, or the King of Darkness Evil. I gave the Okada Jay White match 4 stars, and the big thing was the storytelling in that match. The way Jay, they really, I'm not going to make you, I'm not going to give it away, but I'm just going to say they told a really significant story that's easy to pick up on about the dynamic between Jay White and Okada. Michael Elgin and Evil, this is normally would be in their never open weight division, which is more of the big guys hardcore fighting division. So if you like big guys just knocking their crap out of each other, that's what you get in that match. And Michael Elgin is just a hell of a performer. He's probably if not my favorite New Japan wrestler, he's right there at the top two. And so those matches were really good. And so, I definitely, on that night, I think the lowest match was Bad Luck Fale and Adam Page at 3 stars, and I still think it was a good match to watch. In general, that first night, and I think a lot of it was the excitement and a lot of matches was the excitement and the buildup of it, but it was just like, I'd say like every match is worth it. But if there's a match, I'd say, oh, okay, you can skip. It'd probably be Suzuki and Tanahashi, because I love Minoru Suzuki. His attitude, his character is one of my favorite wrestlers. But it's either him or Elgin in the favorite wrestlers that, you know, work New Japan all the time. But he works a lot of submission. He works a lot of arm bars, a lot of leg locks. So a lot of his matches are just sitting there. So I know it's
that.
It's the selling and the story, but a lot, especially when he goes Tanahashi, he goes after the knee and he works the knee and he puts him in the heel hook, and he'll sit in the heel hook for like 12 minutes. That's not an exaggeration, like a real 12 minutes, and Tanahashi will be selling it the whole time. And it's just, but he has a way of making you, it kind of, keep in touch. But I mean, a lot of people, if that's not the type of wrestling you like, I could see you checking out.
I dig it. So what did you tell me what you rated the Elgin, the Big Mike versus Evil match? What did you rate that again?
I gave it a 3.5 star. So the reason I gave it a 3.5 star, I honestly, Michael Elgin in my heart would probably get an extra half. It would have probably been a 4-star match. But I was trying to rate it objectively, you know.
In other words, you love Big Mike, and you didn't want to give him a high rating simply because of your love for him as a performer.
Correct, because gotcha. You know, I was just trying to base it on the technical style, the storytelling of the match. That's why it was a 3.5. To me, it was a 4. You know, but anytime Big Mike is wrestling, he's probably one of my favorite matches.
I got you. I like it. So let's move on to night 2, which was July 15th, and that was day 1 for B block.
Yes, B block, the loaded block. It's the death block.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the match that sticks out in my head and or on this paper that I'm looking at, on this website that I'm looking at, so real quick, shout out to Voices of Wrestling for breaking down the entire G1. And given us the list of every single match on the correct day and what block it's from and all that jazz. But the match, and I've actually watched this match twice, was the main event, and that's Tetsu Naito versus Kenny Omega. What did you think about that match?
Oh, man, that match was damn near perfect. I was listening to this New Japan show that I listened to, and good Lord. I know what it's called, Super J-Cast, and he brought up the point that when he's rating, you're not going to get 5 stars unless he's emotionally invested in a match, and that's probably the only thing kept me from giving 5 stars. It's like the match was technically and proficiently worked perfectly. I mean, Kenny Omega's amazing. Naito's amazing when he has someone amazing to work with. I find him hard to watch when he doesn't have someone really good to work with, but he had somebody really good to work with, and they're both athletic, and you know, they're kind of hard-hitting, and they're both kind of cocky. So it was a very good back and forth. And I mean, I think their last match in the G1 last year got 5 stars. So this match, you know, I mean, it's almost like an Omega Okada thing. They're always going to put up on a classic match. So we got the 4 4¾. But if someone said, "Hey, I gave it 5, I wouldn't be mad.
Yeah, I dig it.
And but if someone says, "Hey, I gave it 4.5, I wouldn't be mad either. I'm never going to argue with anybody over a quarter of a point. If you thought it was 4.5 and I thought it was 4¾, and you thought it was 5, I'm like, but yeah, if someone says, "Yeah, it was like a 3.5, okay, we need to discuss. Cause I need to see what you, I need to see what you were saying. Because, you know, maybe I overrated it, you know. I know Kenny Omega sometimes gets the point bump because he's Kenny Omega, you know. So I'm like, it's like you almost expect him to give you a 5. So in your mind, you're already at 4.5, and you're like hoping he can give you the extra moves to get to 5. So, you know, I definitely try to, like, Kenny Omega's not one of my favorite wrestlers. So
what?
He's not. I one thing I can't shake is the overuse of the V trigger.
That to me is something that's so awesome about him, because he, you know, it just like makes him like violent and sadistic, especially when he was more of the cleaner instead of the best bout machine, you know, where it was like he was punishing people, you know, because he always hits it when they're on their knees. So it was like, you know, he had them tied down and was just like torturing them, you know.
But yeah, but you're in a match, and once he hits it for, seriously, like the 6th or 7th time, and the person doesn't go out, it's like, I honestly wish it would be more special. I mean, it's the most violent looking knee in wrestling. I mean, him and Buddy Murphy are just on another level of everybody else. So, man, if he just did it twice a match, it would mean more, because it would mean the person's going out. He just uses it so much, it bothers me.
Fair point.
To me, it's like Brock and his German.
I got you. Where he's doing just 14 and 16 a night.
Yeah, and it's like, your German must not be that effective, because if it was effective, you would only need to do it like once.
Right.
So it's like, oh man, these knees look amazing. But good Lord.
I hear you.
First of all, this dude shouldn't be walking straight after getting kneed in the head 4 times.
True story.
Yeah. So, but hey, like I said, it's violent, but that's just one thing that bothers me. It's that overuse of one move. He's an amazing wrestler. I acknowledge he's probably the best wrestler in the world. I'm not taking that away from him. It's like people that don't like LeBron, but they acknowledge that he's the best basketball player. He's just not their type of basketball player. That's kind of the thing. I acknowledge Omega is better than pretty much everybody else. He just doesn't wrestle a style I enjoy. Like, overly. I'd rather like the Michael Elgin, the hard-hitting style, the Suzuki. Hey, I don't mind him sitting in a leg lock for a while. It's just their character work. It's just crazy. And like I said, nothing wrong with Kenny Omega. It's just not my thing. The second best match of that night, because I like to give you 2, I would go with Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr., which was the match right before the main event. It's just Zack Sabre Jr. and Ibushi. Ibushi does this great job in his pre-interviews of saying that Zack wrestles a style that he doesn't like, that he hates, and he's not used to, and he's not comfortable with. And they do a great job of selling that story when they wrestle each other. Ibushi looks uncomfortable when he goes up against Zack Sabre Jr. So I definitely appreciate that fact. I like the extra layer on the story there. But this match was done, obviously, of the night ones, it was the better one. Like I said, the lowest I had that night is Ishii and Yanu at 3¼. But everything else was either 3¼ better. Like, because I tell you, in my opinion, 3.5 is a good score. That means it is worth watching. It just wasn't, like, great. So we had 3 matches at 3.5 and then 1 at 3¼. So that of the first 2 nights, the Block B was definitely stole the show.
I dig it. I absolutely dig that, man. So definitely B Block Day 1, July 15th. That's a show that you need to go back and watch if you haven't watched it yet.
You could actually call it the Belt Block because all the people with belts are in the B Block.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Yeah, Juice Robinson. Yeah. That's awesome. How do you feel about Juice Robinson's character? You know, he's kind of got the flamboyant thing. That's a relatively new gimmick, right?
Yes, but his matches don't ring flamboyant to me.
Right.
They read very physical, American, like, punchy style. It's just like, what he wears is just clothes. It's not a gimmick, you know, because it's not very flamboyant.
Right.
Like, his gimmick, I mean, how he acts is not very flamboyant. Like, it's, I'm trying to think of someone, like, you know, there was a back in the day, the adorable Adrian Adonis, Goldust. Those were like, oh, Velveteen Dream. Oh, that's a flamboyant character. It's a very exciting, charismatic, expressive type character. I would say he's flamboyant. Juice is just like American type brawler, and he's really loud.
Right.
So that might be flamboyant in like Japan and their culture, just being loud is being flamboyant.
I hear you. Yeah, I agree. Let's go on to A Block Day 2, which was the third day overall, and it was July 16th, and it was in Sapporo. And the two matches that I'm going to tell you really stick out when I just look at it is, number one, Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Jay White, which I watched that match, and I personally think it was great. I can't wait to hear what your thought is. But one match that I did not watch that I just realized I'm going to go back and watch today when you and I get off, after we get done recording this show this morning, is Big Mike, Michael Elgin versus Hangman Page.
Yes. And Elgin and Page was my match of the night. And I tried to say that as objectively as possible. I gave it a 4 again. I probably actually thought it was like a 4.5, but it was a 4. It was a 4. They really went after each other. They actually were in 1 year apart in ROH classes. Elgin got signed a year before Page. And so they worked together quite a bit, and they were comfortable with each other, and you could tell, but they did it in the New Japan way. They didn't work an ROH match. They worked a New Japan match. It was very physical, lots of forearms. It was a really good match, and I enjoyed it. And I just think, it was just like they kind of stole the show because I don't think a lot of people expected it to be as good as it was.
I dig it. So if you had to put a rating on Tanahashi versus Jay White, what would you say?
Okay. It was one of those ones I try to stick with my initial rating because I believe your initial gut feeling is right, and I gave it a 4. But if you would have asked me like today or not, it probably would have been a 4.25, 4.5. I really love Jay White's storytelling. I am, like I've told people on here before, I come through wrestling from more of a storytelling part. The moves are great. I can understand and appreciate a great technically worked match. I'm great with that. But if you add emotion and a good story and some good character work into it, that's what's going to push it over the top for me. And Jay White's character work has been amazing to me. It's very much a Western, like American heel style, where he doesn't care about anything or anybody. He'll do whatever it takes to win. And I thought that came across even more in this match. Tanahashi is the John Cena of New Japan. He basically, the company, when it was coming back, was built on his back. And he's a little older now, and he's trying to keep his spot. So it was like those two things were told really well in that match. And since Tanahashi had actually beat Jay White at the beginning of the year at Wrestle Kingdom to retain his Intercontinental title, that added an extra layer of the story.
I like it. I absolutely like it. So now we're going to be going into some uncharted territory, my friend. So we're going to day four, which is the second day of the B block. It took place on July 19th. I always mess this up. Is it Korakuen? Korakuen Hall?
Okay. It's Korakuen Hall. That's Korakuen. How us Americans pronounce it. I heard English people, I hear it pronounced as Korakuen Hall. But I just go with Korakuen. Everyone knows what you're talking about if you say that.
So let's see the match, and I'm just going off of looking at the matches because I did watch a match from this show right here, and it was Yanu versus Zack Sabre Jr. But if I was to pick one match that stands out to me that I would like to hear you talk about and rate, that would be Juice Robinson versus Kota Ibushi.
Okay. Again, this is another one where when I watched it, right after I watched it, it was 3.5. It was probably a 4. It was a really good match. Juice Robinson, Ibushi, I don't think it's possible for him to have a bad match. And I'm saying that as objectively as possible.
No, I get it.
Seeing him in the Cruiserweight Classic, that was really my first dose of Kota Ibushi. I got him in the Cruiserweight Classic, and he had nothing but great matches. And then ever since I've seen him there, and then he came to New Japan, he's had nothing but great matches. So I don't know if it's possible for him to have a bad match. Like, if he had a bad match, I would blame it on the other guy. That's how good he is. So this match, Juice has had a hell of a tournament. I mean, he hasn't won a lot, but he's had a hell of a tournament, and this is adding to his maturity. And he definitely went, I went 3.5. I'm going to say stick to what my initial gut is, but if someone was like, man, this was a 4, that's great. We had my biggest discrepancy in the match. The people I listened to on Super J gave this Ishii and Naito match, they gave it a 5 stars.
What? Now, who did that?
This guy named Damon on Super J-Cast. And he's very much into the in-ring performance. That's his thing.
Okay, so, yeah. I know Damon. I don't know him personally, but yeah, on the Super J-Cast.
Yeah, Damon McDonald. He gave it a 5. I gave it a 3.25. So that's a
pretty big difference.
That's a huge difference. He thought the match was perfect. Honestly, I'm watching it, and I wasn't emotionally invested in it.
Right.
I watched it, and I was just like, okay, Naito's going to win. And then he won. And it was like, okay. And it was like, I don't feel like they ever sold me on the fact that Ishii could win the match. So my excitement for the match never built like his. It was a great match. I mean, as far as technically proficient, it was there. I mean, I think they missed a spot and they went right back to it and performed it better. That was great, but it was just like, eh. I just thought it was a better than good match.
I dig it.
And then he went 5 again on the Goto versus Kenny match, and I gave it 3.75. So we look for different things in wrestling. I can honestly say, at times I can get, like I say, I get tired or I check out when he hits like that fifth V trigger. I'm like, oh God. I'm like, it's a beautiful move, but it's just like one of those things. It should be a bigger deal than it is.
Right.
It's like if a wrestler threw the best clothesline you ever seen, but he did it like 11 times every match.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Kenny Omega throws the best knee I've ever seen, but he does it so much, it has lost its luster with me. It's like, oh, there's a V-trigger. I know when he has the head against the ropes and it's to the side and he V-triggers, that's the big V-trigger. But he hits so many different ones through the match.
I like it. That's one small difference we have in our fandom, you and I, is the fact that I think the repeated V triggers are kind of like a, I don't really know how to explain it, but I dig it. I like how he's got this set of moves that he always goes back to if he needs to put someone away, similar to, you know, signature moves. that you would see on, you know, like the video games and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of, like, setup moves, or, you know, like Arn Anderson with the spine buster. I just think it's his spine buster, I guess you would say. But I do understand what you're saying, you know.
Yeah, but it's a little, Arn only gets hard. Spine buster once.
That's what I was getting at. It's probably be a little hard to get used to Arn doing a spine buster six times a match, you know.
Like, if every time someone jumped at him, he was spine bustering him. It's like, it's not special. It's not a signature. It's just, like I said, when I thought of the whole Kenny Omega being a human, like a video game character coming to life, a lot of what he does makes sense to me now. Doesn't mean I like it. It just makes sense.
Right.
Him using the V-trigger? Yes. Because if you're playing Street Fighter and you get that V, get it full where you can use that V-trigger, you're going to use it. And if you can use it two or three times in the same fight, great. If you know every time that guy jumps up, you're going to do like a flash kick or something like that, you know what? You're going to do it every time.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking of him like a video game character, it makes sense that he uses the V-trigger too much.
Right.
But me, I think of him as a wrestler, and it's like, frick, you use that same move way too much.
All right, let's move on to July 20th, which is day three for the A block. And I'll tell you, I watched this Michael Elgin versus Jay White, which is the first match that pops off the screen to me. That was one, I'm just going to say it, that was a fucking hard-hitting match, bro.
Yeah.
What'd you think about it, and was it the best match of the night?
And that's what Elgin brings. That is what Elgin brings, is that hard-hitting style. Again, Floyd rating, probably a 4.5, but I went with a 4. Trying to be objective. Actually, not the match of the night. The match of the night was Okada versus Hangman Page.
Really?
Hangman Page turned up the talking and stuff, and he was like, I don't want this shitty loser Okada. I want the Rainmaker Okada. I want Okada at his best, and he's slapping him. And then you see the switch flip like halfway through the match on Okada, and I just thought this was Page's best match like I've seen him in. Other, you know, I mean, and it just like just two shows in a row. He had the one with Elgin, and then he had one with Hangman that were two amazing matches. And yeah, I gave this a 4.25, and yeah, he worked his ass off in that match.
I like it. Real quick, while we're on this one, I just don't picture this being a good matchup. So you tell me, I did not watch this match, so tell me, did it turn out to be a good matchup, or was it a complete shit show, or did the ace of New Japan, or I guess you, what, hang on, we'll discuss that in a second, but the match I'm just talking about is Tanahashi versus Bad Luck Fale. So tell me about that match. What'd you rank it? What'd you rate it?
Okay. So if you're a Western style wrestling, if you grew up, like I'm 37, so late 90s, I was in high school when the Monday Night War hit, and it was the Nitro matches. And then there was the NWO, and they had a lot of run-ins and a lot of interference. If you grew up in that world, the Bullet Club stuff that they've been doing with, The Tongans, that's right up your alley, because it's basically NWO 2.0. If you don't like a lot of interference and stuff, and you just like the straight match performance of wrestling, you freaking hate this. I'm going to tell you that now, because it is all interference. I think Tanahashi won by DQ, but for me, it was me. Junior year in high school, Hogan had turned heel and somebody was trying to win the title, and it's everything to me. So I gave it a 3.5. Honestly, if you're going straight in ring, straight performance, it's like a 2. But it got a 3.5 for me because it spoke. I mean, my ratings are me, and it spoke to me because it was everything I used to love about the NWO.
I like it. So I had a quick question. I almost called Tanahashi, the Ace of New Japan. Is that his nickname, or is he the Ace of the Universe? Because I know what... No,
his nickname is the Ace of New Japan.
Okay.
You are correct.
And the, okay, so that's the one that I was going to say. And then the Rainmaker, Kazuchika Okada, is the Ace of the Universe, correct?
Well, he, okay.
Offhandedly? That's what he's called?
Yeah, because they just call him Go Haste. But yeah, he's the Ace of the Universe or whatever. But technically, if you want to say who's the official Ace of New Japan, it is Okada.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but Tanahashi's nickname is the Ace of New Japan. It's like, who's the face of the WWE? Roman Reigns. But John Cena was the face that runs the place. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I got you. I got you. All right, man. So next we're going to go up to July 21st, which is a B-Block day. And this is where we finally get the Kenny Omega versus Tama Tonga. Tell me about that match. What'd you rate it? Did it live up to the hype? Do you think these two guys are going to be in the finals of the B block against each other?
No, because I think Tama Tonga's only won one match. So he's been DQ'd like two or three times. So
for the same shit match, for his brother and dad coming in, probably.
Yeah. So yeah, and that's what happened. And that's what happened in this match. Tonga got DQ'd. I gave it 3 stars because it ended in a DQ. But it had this. I mean, it was crazy. I mean, we had Tongaloa, Folly. They both interfered. And then Chase and Adam Page came down to make the save. And then it was a big old fight. And then I believe this was the moment, and you might have seen the screenshots of this. So they beat up the ref, they beat up Red Shoes, and then Tonga's on top of Omega for the three, and Red Shoes types one, clits 1, 2, and then he just sticks his hands up and gives them the middle finger, and then DQs Tonga. So it was crazy. It was a crazy match. Like I said, I don't know. How old are you, Jordan?
I'm 29.
Okay, because you were a little younger than me, but the main event of Nitro for like 83 weeks in a row ended the same way.
Yeah, ended in a run-in, schmoz.
Yeah, ended in a run-in, and with NWO basically taking over the ring, sometimes it was staying, but it was all every week. It ended the same week, and we gotta go. You remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tony Schiavone. We gotta go, and he would time it perfect. As soon as the copyright 1996 came on, the bottom right hand corner. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So.
And it seemed like at least twice a month, Nitro ended in the parking lot too. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
I was a big WCW guy. Huge WCW guy.
Me too. So if you love that, you love this match. Again, if you're into the art of storytelling in wrestling, you hated this match because I think they only wrestled like 5 minutes before the interference came in. It was crazy. It wasn't a long match. It wasn't a technically sound match. It was a lot of crap thrown at it, and like I said, it's like, yeah, it was that, and it's like you had too many people. But I'm thinking they're trying to make you wait on Tonga and Omega. Me personally, I think Tonga's going to keep messing with Omega, and they have this show in the U.S. at the end of September, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
That show, the end of August or end of, I think it's the end of September. They have this show, and I think that's going to end up being the main event. It's like he's going to piss Kenny Omega off so much that Kenny's going to challenge him for the world title.
Hmm.
And okay. So, of course, you're going to get a lot of run-ins, and I think, you know, you have Cody and the Young Bucks and everybody running in, you know, and of course Kenny eventually wins, but I think that's what we're building to.
Yeah. I have to say, I don't dislike that idea. I mean, New Japan, if anybody's going to make it work, New Japan will get it to work, but for the reigning IWGP World Heavyweight Champion challenging someone, I think that's pretty cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and when it goes into it, it's just, they're trying to appeal to the Western crowd, and in our world, run-ins are a part of wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, false finishes, DQs, that's a part of wrestling to us. I know New Japan is kind of like a higher on the quality stuff, but if they're trying to get, that, I mean, they have the hardcore money. Right now, they're trying to get the casual money. You know what I mean? Because
yeah,
they got my $866 a month. They're gonna get that. They know they got that. You know, but if you want to build in, I think the new CEO said he wanted to be a 10 billion yen, and if that's the case, you got to get all the money. You have to get money from everywhere.
Right.
You can't just go towards the hardcore fan.
Yeah, yeah, I get that. I totally get that.
But on this night, the best matches, the main event, Goto and Ishii, and now this is 100% New Japan match. If you like hard hitting, physical, man, there's a couple times I question whether this is real or not type situations. Uh-huh. That's Goto and Ishii. It was strong style to a T. If you're teaching a class in training and wrestling, and you say, "Hey, what's strong style?" You put on Goto versus Ishii.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, it was. I gave it 4.25. Match of the night, just knocking the crap out of each other.
And I love it.
So that would be my must watch. But this was actually probably one of the better nights of B-Block, because you also had Juice versus Naito, and I gave that a 4-star, and I thought that was the best, at that time, the best Juice match I'd seen. Him and Naito worked well together, and it was just a really, really good match. So if you had to watch two matches from that night, Juice and Naito and Goto and Ishii, I can say, of the B-Block, This was their most entertaining night. This is like, if you have the time, watch all 5 matches. Because Yano and Ibushi was kind of quick, but it was super entertaining. Like, I gave it a 3-star because, you know, it's a lot of cheating because it's Yano. But it was really, really entertaining, so don't skip it. And then you had Zack Sabre Jr. and Sonata. So this was basically a rematch from their New Japan Cup. This was a rematch for their match from that match, and CSJ beat Sonata in the New Japan Cup. And in this match, they did a lot of wrestling and grappling, but it wasn't like the sit in the hole for 2 minutes. It was like almost like the British style chain wrestling, and it was really good.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So you got a lot of different type of matches that night. You had the fun match. You had a really technical match. You had we're trying to shoot for star at 5 stars match with Juice and Naito. Then you had a bunch of interference in the Mega Tonga, and then Goto and Ishii was to knock the shit out of each other's match. So I honestly say that was probably the most rounded night of wrestling as far as the B Block.
Really? So July 21st. That is,
yes.
If you were going to watch up until this point, if you were going to only could watch one night of the tournament, you would watch B Block on July 21st.
Yeah, it's just a very entertaining night of wrestling.
Awesome. I love it. I absolutely love it. Next, we're going to go July 22nd. We're back to the A Block. And the Jay White versus Minoru Suzuki really stands out. I have not seen this match, but please don't break my heart and tell me that it was a fucking awesome match.
No, it was all right. I mean, honestly,
it's just all right.
Of the night, I put it's the sentence. This was a definite sentence because I put it right at the end of the show. Very forgettable night of matches.
Oh, okay.
It was just. We had Elgin and Yoshihashi. They put on a good match with the surprising ending. Evil and Bad Luck Fale. They did the bad version of the NWO stuff. It was just kind of boring. Suzuki and Switchblade was funny because Switchblade was scared of Suzuki and he was running away from him the whole match. But that, when they got actual down to the physical, it was just kind of eh. And then Hangman versus Tanahashi, I didn't like it all. I didn't think they had any chemistry together. Tanahashi after the match said Hangman was wasting his life with the Bullet Club, gave him a bunch of love and praise, I wasn't really feeling the match. Somebody else, I think I saw someone go 4 on this, and I was like, I don't know what you watched. I mean, it had my whole complete attention, but I was bored out of my mind.
Right.
And then Makabe versus Okada, just not a big Makabe fan.
You're not a Makabe fan?
Not a Makabe fan.
Oh, okay.
When he has a fight, when he wrestles Goto or Suzuki, when he wrestles the other people that are the strong style people, he's pretty good. But like when he has to put on a match, great match with Okada, I just think it's okay. So the match was okay, and then Okada won kind of easily.
I got you.
Yeah, so like I said, it was like I watched it. It was just a bunch of matches. You're gonna get in the middle of the G1, and you're gonna get nights like this.
It kind of slumps a bit.
Yeah, it's just where it's just matches like when you're watching matches every night, you become more of a snob. You know, once you've seen a 5-star, right? A 3.5-star is a little hard to take. You know, once you've seen a 4.7, 5-star, your level of what you want out of a match kind of goes up. So the longer we go into the G1, the less and less high scores you're probably going to get from me.
I dig it. I dig all this, getting to sit underneath the learning tree with you. Because this is my first G1 climax, and I'm watching it during the day, mostly in the morning time I'm watching it, and then getting to talk to you about it when we start recording between 7:30 and 8. So it's just a lot of fun, dude. Love getting to learn all this stuff. I can't believe that I didn't know about New Japan sooner. You know, I didn't start really watching it until, I guess it's been just under 8 months now. I started watching it at Wrestle Kingdom 12, and but man, these guys are true professionals getting out here and wrestling, you know, this tournament. 19 days, or is it 19 days long, right?
I don't know. It's 19 days. Yeah, 19 shows.
Yeah, so for these guys to be out there and kicking ass for 19 consecutive days like that, or nearly consecutive, whatnot, you know, it's very taxing on the body, and for these guys to still be putting out stellar matches is really cool, you know?
Yeah.
Really cool.
The thing I say about this, it's like, you know, WWE's never going to put on these type of matches. I never hate to, you know, I hate the comparison. But, you know, like when you have a big name, like Yoshihashi, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is not a big name in New Japan, but no one beats him in 3 minutes.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and to me, there is a respect level there that goes with wrestlers. So it's like when you got Mike Bennett's, the Zack Ryders, all those people, I don't think it does your company or the big guy any benefit having them beat them really quickly. Because now when that guy that just got beat in 2 minutes beats someone else, I mean, if you're a person that loves wrestling and pays attention and keeps it, you're like, does that mean that new person that he just beat is shittier? You know, I mean, I know the WWE doesn't think like that. So, I mean, I'm not going to ask them to. But I'm just saying, if you want to, that's why I tell people don't try to put New Japan logic on WWE, because you'll just get pissed. And don't try to put WWE logic on New Japan, because you'll just get pissed.
And I've caught myself doing that numerous times, comparing the two, and they're just not the same product. And I have to rein myself in sometimes after doing that.
But you got to think about it. I mean, New Japan is built towards a Japanese culture that is all about honor and fair play. They actually have attention spans, so putting on a 15-minute match isn't forever. WWE is to an American fan base, and a mostly American fan base, who, you know, doesn't have that long of attention span. Like a 15-minute match is like, that was forever. you know, and and you know, we were about doing anything it takes to win, and we're not really about fair play. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just if you think about that, when you think about who the products are aimed to, you will know not to compare them, because they're two different worlds. You know, it's a very Eastern world versus a very Western world. So in the Eastern world, I love New Japan because my big thing is they treat it like a real sport.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not. I mean, it is a real sport, but it's a cooperative sport, not a competitive sport.
I got you.
So it's
that's a good way to put it, actually.
Yeah, it's a sport. You are competing for reactions from your crowd, because instead of getting cards from the German and Russian judges, you get applause. That's what you're competing for.
I dig it. Yeah, it's so unique, isn't it? It's just not what we grew up watching.
It's cooperative. It's cooperative sport, and you're competing for applause and reaction. You know, you're trying to make people feel. And it's like I said, it's like the first time I went to a theater and I watched at a theater, and the first thing I thought, this is wrestling. You know?
Right.
That was the first thing I thought. I was like, you have to, just like in a wrestling match, you have to suspend your disbelief, because they have these sets and stuff, and you're not really in Oz or Sweden or anything, but you have to get into that moment where you're in that area and you're having that moment of pretending, and you know, and you get caught up in those moments and those times where you lose that, you know, for those milliseconds that you lose the fact that you're in a room with a bunch of people watching and you're lost in the story. That's what wrestling fans live for.
I agree.
Like when you jump up and you're like, man, get him, you know, and like you're really hoping, like that moment in that last 3 minute stretch when you're just praying that Kenny Omega wins this belt. And it's like, for that 3 minutes, it was as real as anything else that you ever had.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can tell you I've experienced that. I mean, anytime I watch a great show, I am able to suspend my disbelief, you know, and I absolutely love that I can do that, because there's a lot of critical WWE fans out there that cannot enjoy watching wrestling. They cannot suspend their disbelief and just go and enjoy a two-hour indie show. They just can't do it. So I'm very fortunate that I can do it no matter where we're at. When it comes to whether it be an indie show or a WWE show, like I can get into the moment and just turn my brain off, basically. So I'm very fortunate in that sense.
Yeah, and that's why I gave the Omega matches 7 stars, because you, or 5 stars or whatever, because the thing about it is, you took two wrestlers, Kenny Omega and Okada. Neither one are my favorite wrestlers. I really don't have any emotional attachment to them. I, for the most part, up to the match, could care less who won. But in that last 10 minutes of that match, I was standing up. I sweat a little bit. My hands were shaking, because by the end of that thing, I needed Omega to win that match.
Yeah.
That's how I felt. And like I said, this was someone going in that didn't have any emotion towards either one. I didn't care. they hooked me so much with the storytelling from Kevin Kelly, you know, storytelling from Okada, storytelling from Kenny Omega, that I needed Omega to win that match. Like, I would have been genuinely disappointed, and it would have ruined my day if Kenny Omega didn't win that match.
I got you. Yeah, I know the feeling. Not that particular match, but I know the feeling. I know about suspending my belief or my disbelief and really getting into it and just like, this has got to happen. He has got to win this world title. He's getting shafted if he doesn't. Yada yada yada. Yeah, that's me all the time, and we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
Next and finally, we're gonna go to the 26th. We're gonna save. I know the 27th aired early this morning. But we're going to save that for one. I have not finished it yet. Did you get to finish it?
No, I still have two
matches. You still have two matches. That's what I thought. I couldn't remember if you had told me that when I texted you, or if you told me that at the beginning of the show. But we have neither one of us has finished the July 27th, so we're going to save that. So we're going to end with the July 26th show. And the match that pops off to me right off the bat is Juice Robinson versus Kenny Omega. Was this the best match of the night, and what did you rank everything?
Oh, my God. It was a great match. And, again, the matches that I tell y'all like the most are the ones I get emotionally invested on.
Right.
And I was really, really rooting for Juice.
Oh, you're rooting for Juice.
Yeah, I was. It was just because he has the bad hand. And he's been working with the bad hand.
Yeah.
And it was like, and he lost. And he hadn't won any matches yet. So he's lost every match. So I figured, okay, Omega can eat a loss. And then I was like, and it wouldn't be that big a deal. And it was like, and Juice, and he's such, you know, he's a good promo. He's a very good promo. And he sells me on the fact of him really wanting to win and stuff. And it was a really good match. And I got emotionally involved. And but in the end, like, the what's gonna drop the rating to me is like the last 2 minutes or last 3 minutes were very anticlimactic. It was very much a definitive win. It was like Omega is better than Juice.
I got you.
It got 3¾ from me. If it was a little more, I mean, and I understand a storytelling wise why it had to be that way, especially with the promo Juice cut after. About having to work to get better and how every Gaijin's goal should be to be as good as Kenny Omega, and Kenny Omega was the best worst in the world. That made it make sense to me, but as far as entering action because of how it ended, I gave it 3¾. 3¾ is nothing to sneeze at. That's a good match.
Absolutely it's not. Just, that would that when's the last time we seen Raw have a WWE Raw, which is a 3-hour show, 52 weeks out of the year. When's the last time we've seen them have a 3¾ star match? Maybe, I think, I can't remember the last time there was a 3¾ star match on there. I know, I'm pretty sure 3.5 stars was given to Ziggler and Rollins the night that Ziggler beat him for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
Which was a great match.
I think that gauntlet match where Seth went 1.5 hours, I think that was the last thing they got.
Yeah, and that had 5 people in it, or 6 people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. I understand.
So that's what I was just saying. 3¾ is nothing to sneeze at.
Absolutely.
It didn't get match of the night because Sonata and Obushi was freaking amazing. it was a really good, because they're both athletic, and they're pretty much the mirror image of each other. There's this funny meme you see where Spider-Man's looking at Spider-Man, and that's kind of how Sonata and Obushi are. Obushi emotes a little bit more, but I mean, they put on an excellent match, and Sonata's Dragon Sleeper, especially, you know, when he does the dragon swing, I mean, the giant swing out of him, and he spins him around, and then he lays down. I just think that's so cool. And they put on a hell of a match, and Obushi couldn't hit the Boomaye to win. I think that's what it's called. And so Sonata ended up winning the match, and I found out it was his hometown, so he ended up cutting the promo before the end of the night. So, but those last two matches, definitely watch. Actually, because you had Naito and Tamatanga, again, they're 2.5 if you don't like the WCW stuff, 3.5 if you do. And then Ishii and Zack Sabre Jr. had a very surprising ending, and I gave that a 3.5 also. And again, it was entertaining. The Hirooki Goto and Yano match was the only match I would say you could skip.
Okay, I dig it.
I mean, yeah, but the other four were good. But if you're gonna do much watch, just watch Sonata and Ibushi. But I think you would kick yourself if you missed the Juice Omega match, because the Juice Omega, I think it's building a longer-term story.
I dig it. I absolutely dig it. I would love to see them in a long-term feud, in a story or a storyline rather, and or feud or storyline, which is, I think, the same thing. I would love to see it. I'd absolutely love to see it. I love Juice Robinson. It seems like he's learning more and more about himself and his abilities in the ring every single day. Like you said, he's a phenomenal promo guy. So it's just really cool to see him really coming into his own, and have the confidence to go out there and to give Kenny Omega a run for his title, even though I know it's a non-title match being in the tournament, but you know what I mean. Like, you know, having such a good showing against the champ that later on he's granted a title shot.
But I do want to point out,
uh-huh,
Juice learned how to promo at WWE. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, he was CJ Parker, right?
Yeah, and he went to the Dusty Rhodes School of promos. He was in those hour promo classes where they had to pretend to be different characters. And so, understand, he might have learned to really, really wrestle in New Japan, but he learned to promo in the WWE.
Can't hate him from learning from WWE. If he was there and he didn't learn something, I'd be more worried, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I mean, you just think about it. If you were American and you had any talent, you've been through WWE's developmental system.
I'm sure.
You look at Omega's was in the developmental system.
Yeah, in Deep South in Georgia, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't know what they had. And then Juice was there. They didn't know what they had. And you know what? There's probably 5 or 6 more people in developmental right now that's not going to quite make it in the WWE, and you're going to hear about them somewhere else.
Yep.
Because, you know what, even New England misses on a pick every now and then when it comes to the NFL wrestling. You know, even the best of the world, you know, you don't know what they're going to do. I know WWE didn't know what they had in Juice, but I don't know if Juice actually translates to the WWE style, because once he went to New Japan, he became a lot more adult, inner-oriented. He cussed a lot more during matches. Almost all his promos have at least one F-bomb, and he's much more passionate, and that's not something you can do in the WWE.
I agree. So before we go here, Mr. Floyd, I want you to tell me who's going to win A Block, who's going to win B Block, and who is going to win the tournament overall.
Right now, since we are in the dead center, I'm going to stick with my original pick. Jay White in the A block, Naito in the B block, Naito winning the tournament
back to back
and challenging Kenny Omega at Wrestle Kingdom, and it'll be their rubber match because Kenny Omega. Naito beat Kenny Omega in the G1 for the finals last year. Omega beat Naito this year on the first night of the G1, and that will be the rubber match.
I like it, man. That's cool throwback. I dig it. I love it, man, and I love that we got to go through this entire list with you today. If no one's told you today, or if no one's told you in a while, Floyd, you are one smart motherfucking dude when it comes to wrestling and when it comes to New Japan and when it comes to the G1 Climax, dude. I can tell that you do your homework. I hope that I can be half as informed about New Japan as you are. I can only yep, hope for it, man. So
I always said this. I'm like, I wish, I love that. I love talking about wrestling. I wish I would have been this passionate about like math or something. So I can be like super rich or something, but I'm passionate about wrestling. So.
Right.
So I pay attention to the minute details that nobody cares about. I'll watch a match 3 times just because I didn't understand the story that they were telling. That's who I am. I just love this. And it was like, my friend was like, "What are you doing?" She asked me what I was doing. I was like, "I'm watching wrestling." And she was like, "Well, it's not. It's Thursday." And I was like, "I watch wrestling every day."
Well, I love it, dude, and I love your picks. I love your insight. I love your take on each match. I love, man, I just loved everything about this show. This was a lot of fun. I am going to, for anyone listening that wants to follow along and see the list that I was talking about that breaks down where all the matches are, or what days and who's in which block, and then it gives at the very top it gives like a small profile and a picture of each performer. I am gonna message that out, or I'm gonna put that out right now on the Facebook, on the show's Facebook, and I'll get it up on the Twitter too, so if anybody wants to go check that out. Floyd, tell everybody where they can find you on the weekends when you're not hanging out with Lolio me up here.
All right. Well, I do a podcast called Around the Ring. It records every Sunday and uploads every Sunday afternoon. Hopefully, I'll be having a little announcement about the show soon. You can get me on Twitter at Around the Ring OK, Facebook Around the Ring OK. Send any emails or any questions to aroundtheringok@gmail.com. I love answering questions. I honestly want to do a question and answer episode soon, but I got to get some questions to answer. You get that and you'll see me on here on this show. And right now we are running a contest for Around the Ring where you can pick our tagline. It runs to the 31st. If you pick our tagline, submit our tagline, and get it to us anyway, Twitter, Facebook, email it to me. I don't care how you get it. And it ends up winning. We end up using it. I'll buy you a shirt from either Pro Wrestling Tees or WWE.com. Any shirt you want. So if you can find a $59.99 t-shirt, whatever, I don't care. But any shirt you want from that site as appreciation for picking the tagline. So that's about it.
That's awesome, dude. That is very awesome. And real quick, don't forget, on August 12th, for all people that live in Texas, Heroes of Wrestling will be there in Royce City, Texas. I will be on color commentary. Heroes of Wrestling is my home promotion. I also work for the WFC in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So don't forget, come out, support your local independent wrestling promotion. Come see me. Come say hi. Thank everyone that has tuned in recently and become new listeners of the show. Thank you to everyone that's been here since day one. We are so happy about the increase in numbers. We just want to get our message out there, give our ideas on wrestling, our take on wrestling, our take on the New Japan Tournament, anything and everything. We just want to talk about it, and we want to talk about it to the degree that people want to listen. We have so much fun doing this, so thank y'all for tuning in. We couldn't do it without you. Don't forget to follow the show on Twitter, on Facebook, or on Snapchat, and the username, Twitter handle, Facebook username are all the same. It is at IWR Daily. That's IWR, standing for Indie Wrestling Radio, and then DAILY, because wouldn't you know, we're a daily morning show. So IWR Daily, that is Snapchat. You can search that on Facebook and Twitter as well. We just want to say thank y'all one last time, and then to you, Mr. Floyd, my Floyd and Savior, thank you so much for breaking down the 2018 G1 Climax for me. I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. For everyone else out there hanging out with us this morning, I want y'all to stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?